Oklahoma has taken the top spot on a list it probably doesn't want to lead. It has overtaken Louisiana as the state with the highest incarceration rate. That's according to the Prison Policy Initiative, which reports the rate is now 1,079 per 100,000 people. So what's going on? John Carl is an assistant professor of sociology and criminology at the University of Oklahoma. He joins us from Norman. Welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you very much.
And why is the incarceration rate so high in your state? Is this about higher levels of crime or just tougher sentencing?
It's not about higher levels of crime, that's for certain. The southern parts of the United States do have slightly higher rates of crime. But generally speaking, I think if you look across the southern half of the United States, you have the mass incarceration boom. In Oklahoma, for example, our incarceration boom really kicked off like most places in the country in the 1980s and just exploded. We're up probably 700% since 1980. And our crime rate's up maybe 20%. So, you know, we're not in the same ballpark at all. And people who want to try to draw that simple correlation have trouble with the math, I think.
And when you break it down, how many of the prisoners are there for nonviolent crimes?
Well, you know, there again, I mean, if you look at state data or even, quite frankly, national data, in state prisons, you tend to have higher percentages of violent offenders. But part of that is simply the length of the sentence that you get. So in our state, though, like, for example, for women, we've led the nation in the incarceration rate of women
right.
for decades now. And the number one category that we incarcerate women in this state for is usually drug possession. And then when you add that into, you know, drug trafficking or drug distribution, well over 50% of the women are in for drug crimes. And then about another 30% of them are in for small larceny, hot checks, stealing your credit card kind mm-hmm. of stuff. So women's prisons are statistically low in violent offenses. Male prisons usually a little higher.
And you've got a high percentage of Native Americans incarcerated in Oklahoma as well.
Yeah. And interestingly, you know, we have about 9% of the state population, roughly, according to the census anyway, would be Native American. But our prison population is about that same percentage. It's not disproportionately higher, whereas with African Americans and Latinos, we are disproportionately higher than the general population.
So earlier this year, the Department of Corrections in the state asked for additional funding to the tune of $1.5 billion. Dollars to build new prisons. How expensive is this prison system to maintain?
Well, it's the third, maybe the fourth largest spending in the state of Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at what Oklahomans spend their tax dollars on, you know, education is number one, health and human services two, and then corrections tends to be three. We've had a strike that made some national news here for teacher pay,
right.
as teachers here have gone for years without pay raises. And the truth of the matter is, one of the reasons that our budget is so tight is that we spend a disproportionately large amount of our tax revenue on locking up our fellow citizens.
And it's not as if they're being locked up in first-class hotels. I mean, the conditions are not
very
good in these
prisons. No. We're overcrowded. I think our state DOC reports right now, I want to say it's like 113% of capacity. But I teach a class inside the women's prison here. The main women's prison is Mabel Bassett. And I teach a class inside that prison where I take OU students into the prison, and then we have class with inmates inside the prison. And part of that deal is always a tour. Well, those women are basically bunk bedded into the day areas because they're so overcrowded that there literally are not cell space for them. They've had to convert some of the cells into shower rooms and changing rooms. But a significant chunk of the prison population inside that prison are literally sleeping in the day room in bunk beds.
How much of a profit motive is there? Are there a lot of for-profit prisons in Oklahoma?
Well, there are. They're not all used by the state. I think right now the state reports that it's only contracting with four. Oklahoma, like lots of states across the nation, you know, kind of got into the private prison boom and built a lot of private prisons. In fact, the prison I go to, Mabel Bassett, was a private prison that the state bought. So we have a number of private prisons. Not all of them are filled with Oklahomans. We had a prison about a year ago here closed because Puerto Rico decided to quit sending people here. So we were turning prisons into an industry in this state. And most of those are in the rural areas in this state, which is a seen as a job for the local people. And so prisons became, and still are, I think, nationally, a, growth market for certain industries or certain geographic areas where there isn't much industry.
But it sounds like the voters in Oklahoma recognize that there is a problem. In 2016, they approved a question on the ballot to reclassify some drug and property crimes as misdemeanors instead of felonies. Has that made a difference?
Not yet. Those reforms have not been fully implemented, but I think when they are, it will. And in fact, our legislature passed about six or seven measures this last session that are designed to kind of shrink the prison population to some degree, some of which had to do with making it easier to get your nonviolent offense expunged, which as a criminologist, I have to say, I think is a really important thing, because if you're in for a small crime and then you get your crime expunged, then you can kind of, it's like a get out of jail free card. You can keep going and don't have to carry that stigma with you forever. Mm-hmm. So that was particularly for nonviolent felonies, you know, made it easier. We've separated out drug possession and drug felonies from other kinds of punishments where previously they'd been kind of linked together and tied together. So I think, you know, honestly, those seven kind of things that we passed this time have a chance to help us. But of course, like all these things, we have a policy in this state. Lots of states have similar things. We called it truth in sentencing here, where if you're a violent offender, you can't even go up for parole until you're 85% of your sentence is, you know, finished. And certain large amount of drug criminals were classified as violent offenders. So even if you set these things into place, they're not retroactive. It doesn't eliminate your prison population rapidly. I think the long-term hope is it will work, but it's going to take a while.
What would your recommendation be? What needs to be done right now in Oklahoma?
Well, I think, honestly, not just in Oklahoma, but everywhere else, we should be looking at outcomes much like we do in every other kind of social service agency in the country. If you look at, for example, hospitals, we publish the death rates and the cure rates and nursing homes, you know, how many people got a bed sore. We publish those kind of data so that the public can be aware of what the outcome of this agency was. We really don't do that with prisons in this country. So we may have a prison in Pennsylvania where they have a recidivism rate of, you know, 12%, and we have another one in Oklahoma where it's 48%. And we're not measuring those two prisons and trying to figure out, okay, why is one mm-hmm. doing a better job than the other? We don't look at violence inside the prison and say, okay, this prison clearly is controlling that population in a safer way than another one. And you know, nationally, again, violence in prison is up across the country. Rapes and assaults go up. Assaults on staff are higher. So when you kind of think about trying to measure these institutions, one of the things I think would be really valuable is for us to consider kind of using the models that are already in place in the healthcare industry, in the education settings. You know, if 67% of my students failed my classes at the University of Oklahoma, I think I would be out of a job. Mm-hmm. And yet the prison system, we tolerate that in many states, that rates that high as failure. So I think kind of looking at prisons in that regard as a kind of a social service product, and what can we do to kind of get them, help them to be better at what they're supposed to be doing, which is correcting. But the truth of the matter is, when you're 120% over capacity and you're basically trying to just make sure people are fed, I don't think it's fair to blame the wardens of these institutions either.
Well, when you say the goal is correcting, the goal is rehabilitation,
right,
not punishment. But it seems like in a lot of places in this country, it's really about punishment, not rehabilitating somebody and getting them ready to enter society again.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the real serious questions as to whether or not, you know, the efficacy of punishment actually works. I think the United States in general has a kind of a punitive attitude about offenders, and it actually, in my opinion, comes from our very early Puritan roots of, you know, slapping the scarlet A on people. And we've just kind of carried this attitude that somehow punishment works. And yet what we know is from our own experience, most of us don't learn very much from punishment except to hate the person that punished us. You know, if you actually reflect upon your own experience of your mother spanking you or whatever happened to you, most of the time that doesn't really yield results. It just makes us better criminals.
That's John Carl, who is assistant professor of sociology and criminology at the University of Oklahoma, the state with the highest incarceration rate in the country. John Carl, thank you.
Thank you.
And if you go to hearandnow.org, we'll link you to the report. You can see where your state ranks.